Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shift podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome. All right. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. Now, you all know that I share some about my past and what I've been through, and today's no exception. In fact, today, I think my past self would not only be really excited to be listening to today's show, but my past self would probably be thinking I was lying about who I have as a guest on today's show. And you'll understand what I mean about that in just a minute. So let me explain. You know, I think back to when I was a preteen and a teenager, and I looked to all the girls in the magazines and on TV, and, you know, I thought they were beautiful. And I thought, you know, if I look like them, then I'd be happy and I'd be acceptable. And if I'm honest, I spent hours comparing myself to all those girls and all the images I saw, and I never looked anything like them, not even close. And all that did was make me feel really, really bad about myself. And I was so desperate to achieve that look and look just like them that, you know, if I'm being honest, I was like a moth to a flame to any advertisement for any product or program that promised to help me look just like them. Now, you know, I don't know to what degree all of this contributed to me having my eating disorder, but I do know I spent years suffering thinking I was doing something wrong because I didn't look like them. For years and years, I suffered because I failed each and every one of those products and programs, and I was convinced I was never, ever going to be happy, and it was all my fault. Now, again, I can only speculate, but I imagine if I would have known all the information we're going to be talking about on today's podcast, then maybe I wouldn't have suffered for so long. If only things would have been talked about or discussed or known. Because I can tell you that once my eyes were open to the truth about media and the diet and beauty industry, things did start to change. And I can also tell you that there was one pivotal video that I saw that made me start to question everything. There was one video where I started to realize that maybe I wasn't the failure, but maybe I was actually being set up for failure. You know, maybe what I was trying to achieve simply wasn't attainable. And that video was Killing Me Softly 3. It said that, you know, that younger part of me would not believe that today's show was going to be happening and who I had on today's show was the guest. There's a reason for that, because all these years and another Killing Me Softly video later, I have the honor and privilege of having with us today the woman who created that video. Jean Kilbourn is, without a doubt, one of the most revered and well-respected pioneering activists, speakers, and writers of our time. Now, there's a lot I could say about her, and I could probably spend a lot more time talking about her bio, but I'll just try to give the highlights. In the late 1960s, she began her exploration of the connection between advertising and several public health issues, including violence against women, eating disorders, and addiction. She launched a movement to promote media literacy as a way to prevent these problems. Although a radical and original idea at the time, this approach is now mainstream and an integral part of most prevention programs. Her films, lectures, and television appearances have been seen by millions of people throughout the world. She was named by the New York Times Magazine as one of the three most popular speakers on college campuses. She's been interviewed by reporters all over the globe and has been featured in Time, Newsweek, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and the Boston Globe, among many other publications. She's been a guest on hundreds of television and radio programs, including NewsHour with Jim Lehrer, The Today Show, 2020, and The Oprah Winfrey Show. And on October 3rd, 2015, she was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame. Jean, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for that. That's very moving, your introduction. I'm touched by your honesty. Congratulations on being in recovery. And of course, I'm very moved by the fact that seeing a version of my film had such an impact on you.
It really opened my eyes to a lot of things. And, you know, I've continued to show Killing Me Softly to my patients too, because I think there is a lack of awareness and knowledge of how media and the diet and beauty industry does have such an impact.
Yes. I mean, there's more, certainly when I started out, you know, it was completely shocking, you know, and it was a very, it was sort of a difficult position to take, because virtually everyone felt totally unaffected by advertising, and people thought that it was not a serious issue. And in fact, even other feminists thought that it wasn't a serious issue, which was difficult for me. Say things like it is, you know, not, we're dealing with violence against women. We're not, you know, we can't deal with something trivial like advertising. And what I would say is, this is certainly not trivial. This is actually contributes to violence. That when you dehumanize people and when you set them, create them to be objects and that sort of thing, it really is creates a climate in which violence and abuse is infinitely more likely. And I think now that's generally recognized. But in those days, you know, originally it was really that was a hard sell. So I had to sort of defend that kind of that position all the time. But again, as I said, and as you said in the introduction, the ideas that were so sort of radical at the time are now really quite mainstream. And also, to my delight, research has actually also contributed to, you know, has proved my point over and over again. So it's nothing, I don't have to make the same kinds of arguments that I did in the beginning.
So I'm actually curious your thoughts and opinions on how you've seen things change since you started all this in the 60s.
Well, the things have changed in so many ways, but I mean, in some ways, things have gotten worse. I mean, a lot of the things that I talked about originally and in the original version of the film were things like the tyranny of the ideal image of beauty and the impossibility of achieving it, the relationship of that ideal image to eating disorders, violence against women, all of those things, the sexualization of children have gotten worse. Advertising is also much more powerful than it was then. More money has gone into it. And one of the big differences is that advertisers now have access to all kinds of research that they didn't have then, all kinds of psychological research, so that they really can be much more effective in the ways that they trigger emotions and feelings in us. So that's one thing. But the big way in which things are better is that I'm not alone anymore, that there are many, many, many people now who are talking about these issues. There are other films, there are books, there's just organizations, all kinds of things. So that's wonderful. I mean, there really has been a huge change in terms of people getting that this is a serious issue. And also media literacy, although the United States remains the only developed nation in the world that doesn't teach it in any kind of systematic way, it certainly has become more widespread than before. More people are involved in it. There are lots of national organizations and that kind of thing. So in all those ways, things have gotten better. Oh, there's another way, of course, about advertising that's changed, and that's the internet and social media. And so that means that advertisers are now able to target us much more individually than ever before. And that makes, you know, that makes things infinitely more difficult for us. And people are turning themselves into ads, you know, the whole idea of branding oneself. So we get a lot of young women in particular, girls, you know, posting images of themselves that have been photoshopped and, you know, putting them on social media and airbrushing or photoshopping them. And anyway, that becomes a real problem, makes things even more difficult.
Yeah, you know, it used to be that it was professional photographers that were the ones altering images that we saw. And just like you said, now things have changed with the increasing usage of social media and the internet, because now anybody can alter the images that we see. And it's of not just celebrities and movie stars, it's of everybody. Everybody's being altered and everybody's seeing each other.
That's right. And it's very different, because it used to be that, you know, we would compare ourselves to the supermodels, let's say, or the models. And we'd think, well, as you said so eloquently in your introduction, you know, yes, you would compare yourself to them and strive to achieve the ideal and all of that. But at least there was some sense that, well, these women are, you know, goddesses or, you know, something like that. Whereas now, girls end up comparing themselves with idealized images of each other. And that makes it probably even more shameful that they feel that they can't achieve that image themselves in real life.
You know, so I'm just curious, what do you make of all these apps now where people can filter themselves and kind of pretty much look like however they want?
It's, you know, that certainly contributes to the problem, because we less and less have any sense of what people really can look like, you know. I mean, obviously we see each other around all the time, but if we are fed this steady diet, as we are, of images on social media that have been transformed, it places much too much of an emphasis on that, among other things, you know, that there's even more of an emphasis for women and girls on looking a certain way and achieving a certain kind of perfection that even than there was before. And of course, we see this with thinness as well. And, you know, that the ideal of being extremely thin is still with us. And because of Photoshop and all these apps, people can whittle down their bodies and, you know, make it look as if they're achieving something that, in fact, they're not. And that's not necessarily a healthy ideal for most women anyway.
Right. You know, I was just watching, I don't know if you saw this Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. I don't know if you've heard of it. I was watching this with my 11-year-old daughter the other night, and they were talking about how plastic surgeons are now saying women are coming in droves saying they want to look just like they do on the filtered apps.
Oh, that's so horrifying. That's so horrifying. I mean, it used to be that plastic surgeons would say that women would come in and say they wanted to look like Barbie, you know, or they would have a model that they wanted to look like, and that's bad enough. But to say that they want to be made to look like idealized images of themselves is really scary.
Right. So, I mean, just wondering, because you've seen, you know, so many changes, and you're obviously somebody who's, this is what you do and you've researched, like, do you think, what do you make of these apps? And do you think there's any way to counter this? Or do you think there's hope that things can get better if this is actually where things are headed?
It's hard to know, I mean, how to counter it in terms of making them, I don't know what, banning them or something. I don't think that can be done. But so I think, and actually that's never been, I've never been so much in favor of bans or legal strategies as I have in promoting media literacy. So the more we can teach people about the harm that's done by this, or how these apps create real psychic damage, you know, that seems to me a better approach than trying to do something to eliminate the apps. Although certainly I would you know, recommend that parents restrict them, and insofar as possible, and also talk to them, their daughters, as you are with yours, about them and about the harm that they can do, and about the fact that not only is this are these images sort of unrealistic, they're also incredibly shallow. I mean, this is not what we should be aiming for. You know, it's not to spend so much time and energy and money striving to achieve a look, as opposed to striving to, you know, be kinder or smarter or better read or more athletic or all the other things that we could be doing that would actually make us feel better and would be so much better for us.
So, and that's a great point. I'm wondering, why is there not more money or advertising put into that, like trying to promote those qualities in us and trying to get us to say, hey, you know what? I'm a great athlete. I'm smart. I'm intelligent. Why is there so much emphasis on the superficial and the external?
The answer to that, I'm afraid, is easy, which is that emphasizing the superficial and the external sells a lot of products. Whereas if you emphasize, I don't know, compassion or even something like, you know, athletic ability or reading more books, I mean, well, that might sell some products. But basically, that wouldn't. The advertising works primarily by creating anxiety about something, often something that one really shouldn't be anxious about to begin with, and then selling us products that purport to solve the problem, but of course they really don't. I mean, as we all know, you know, diet products are totally useless. They not people who use them may lose weight initially, but the 95% of all dieters regain whatever weight they lose within a few years, and they go on to gain more. So there's that. Anti-aging products. Obviously, if there was an anti-aging product that worked, everybody would use it, and it, you know, it would sell. And there, of course, there isn't. None of them do. And so then the deeper problem of why do we feel that it's so criminal almost for a woman to show her age, you know, or to look her age, that's the deeper problem. But if we were to be looking for better things to be striving to achieve, again, that just wouldn't sell anything. It's sort of like, you know, water is a really good thing to drink, you're not going to make money unless, of course, you sell expensive bottled water. That then you make money that way. But the truth is, tap water is fine for most of us in most places, at least in our country. So anyway, you don't make money. You don't make money by encouraging people to look deeper.
Which is so sad. But like you said, it's creating this anxiety or this something's wrong with you. And then, hey, here's this product and it'll fix that right away. Right.
Right. And it doesn't, not only it doesn't work, but it does, as you said, you know, when you were speaking in the introduction, it sort of makes us feel ashamed if it doesn't work. We tend not to blame the product. We think, well, you know, if I'm looking my age, it must be because I haven't found the right product or I'm not using it right or, you know, something like that, rather than saying, this is completely ridiculous. And, you know, I shouldn't be spending my money on any of these products.
Right. And, you know, I feel for the younger generation, just, you know, I'm thinking about, like, I didn't grow up with the internet and I'm thinking, gosh, there must just be so much pressure to, I don't know. I'm just thinking, like, you can't put like a normal picture of yourself out there, because if everyone else is putting these filtered fake photos out, like, what would happen if you actually put a real one out there?
That's very true. And that's why it's been so shocking in a way when some celebrities have put photos of themselves out without makeup, you know, or without Photoshop. And I applaud them when they do that, but it's often quite a shock. And it must be very difficult. I know I did some modeling when I was very young. I mean, obviously, one only does it when one is very young. And there's no more sort of anxious and insecure group of women in the world than the supermodels, because everything depends upon how they look, and any tiny flaw, you know, is or of course the horror of growing older becomes almost life threatening. So it's a very skewed and distorted kind of way of living.
I'm curious about your opinion on even the vicarious shaming in the media. So if somebody does come out like a celebrity and they show a flaw or they gain weight or they anything and they just get chastised or shamed, what kind of effect do you think that has?
Oh, I think that is terrible, because it happens all the time, as you know, particularly with the gaining weight. I mean, to the point that these days, when a celebrity has a baby, she's supposed to get back to her, you know, pre-baby weight in 6 weeks. I mean, something that's almost impossible. I mean, is impossible unless you have a personal trainer and a chef, you know. And even then, it's, you know, not healthy. But that's, I think that creates such an unrealistic expectation. But we're all kept sort of in line by that kind of shame. You know, that we, if we see that a celebrity is shamed because she's put on, you know, a little bit of weight or doesn't look the way she did in a bikini before she had her baby, that sort of thing, then we all feel like that's waiting for us as well. And the truth is, there is a lot of contempt for women who don't measure up to the ideal. So we're not stupid. It's not, we're not making this up, that this is important, that we're going to be judged and that there is going to be a lot of contempt. That's true. But that's also, I mean, I think, you know, a huge problem in the culture. And it's one of, it's the main reason that all of this emphasis does so much psychic harm.
Right. And I was actually curious your thoughts too. I know, in, I think it was Killing Me Softly 4, you mentioned that, I think it was, you praised Adele, I think, for coming out because she had photoshopped on a magazine cover for making her thinner and having longer legs. And she kind of blasted the magazine for doing that. And now recently she's been praised for all her weight loss and all this. I'm just wondering, what kind of effect does that have too, when whether it's her or another celebrity comes out and they just get praised for all this weight loss and looking so amazing? And
yeah, it, I mean, that's horrifying too, because I mean, in a way, you know, it's not going to last, because, you know, our body, we tend to revert to our body type, and the body type that the most of the models have is one that about 5% of American women have. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just that what's wrong is that it's the only type, body type, that is seen as desirable for women. And you're either born with this or not. I mean, it's not something you can diet yourself into, because, or at least not for long. So what happens with celebrities like Adele, or, you know, with Oprah, or, you know, lots of people, they have very curvy body type. It's never going to be super thin. And they can diet themselves to look that way for a time, but it's not going to last. And then all the shame and contempt comes back. So it's really so sad. I mean, it's just so sad, because it, when you think again about the time and the energy that's wasted on this, you know, and the, and again, the psychic damage that it does, what if it's tragic, really, you know? I mean, it really is. What a different world it would be if, I mean, imagine a world in which women didn't wake up every morning hating their bodies, which I would say that a huge percentage of women do wake up that way every day. Imagine if women woke up loving our bodies, wherever they, whatever stage they're in right now, and whatever body type it is, and just loving our bodies, loving our faces, and just being able to go out into the world as we are. It would be a radically different world, you know, and all that energy that would be released, you know, for other things, and for things that are valuable, and things and ways that, you know, women could change the world. Not that we're not doing that anyway, but, you know, it would make such a huge difference.
No, it absolutely would. And I'm just, you know, I don't know if there's any hope, or if you see anything coming that gives anybody some hope that things could go in that direction.
Well, you know, I'm an optimist by nature, and I strive to stay hopeful. You know, again, I've seen, you know, more people become aware of these things, more people striving to bring about change. So I think that all of that will help. And it may also be that, I mean, that we're going to come to, I mean, this, maybe this is not going to sound very optimistic, but I mean, we're up against climate change. We're up against, as you know, where you are, and we're up against huge problems. And it may be that survival is going to become so important that there isn't going to be time anymore for these relatively trivial pursuits, you know? And I mean, that does sound like a fairly dark way to look for hope, but it might be that we'll be united in a way to try and solve these huge problems in the world, and that will set us free from, you know, worrying about wrinkles, or, you know, being, wanting to lose 5 pounds, you know, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Let me just say one quick thing, and I don't mean this to correct you, but the title of the film is Killing Us Softly. And
gosh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's the only reason I'm bringing it up is that it's so important to me that people understand that I wasn't talking about myself, you know, at all, and that by the us, I meant all of us. And I meant not only all women, but men as well, because I feel that I've always felt that the negative image of women affects not only women, but also men. So it's a very common mistake. Don't worry about it at all. But it is one that I always like to say, no, this is, we're all in this together. And this is about all of us.
No, thank you for that. Absolutely. Sorry about that. No, but that makes sense because, you know, so often I think men are ignored in all of this. And I think they are, unfortunately, falling prey to a lot of this now too.
But even more so than that, I mean, because it isn't just that negative images of women harm women and negative images of men harm men. It's that negative images of women harm men as well as women. Because when men are raised, as they are in this culture, to see women as objects, you know, and to dehumanize women, that certainly gets in the way of having successful, intimate relationships with women. And most men want that, you know. So that's one thing. And the other thing is that when there's contempt for not only women, but also human qualities that are considered feminine, you know, like compassion and nurturance and intuition, and men are discouraged from developing those qualities, that also harms men. So the negative image of women and the contempt for women, I think, does a lot of damage to men as well.
Oh, that's so true. Absolutely. Right. I mean, yeah, there's so many problems. I mean, we could probably talk all day long about all of this.
Oh, right? Yeah, there are.
I'm actually curious, you know, if I don't want to, I could keep you all day long, but I mean, as we end, is there anything you could say, you know, to anyone listening out there or struggling with their body image, who's maybe so desperately wanting to look like all the people that they see out on the media? Just like,
I have a website, jeankilbourne.com, and there's a pretty extensive resource list on the website with all kinds of, you know, books and articles and films and that kind of thing. But these days, there have been a lot of memoirs about a recovery. So people like you, people who are in recovery from eating disorders, who are speaking out about it and being honest about it, I think are enormously helpful and really can really help other, you know, women and girls to recover. That's one thing. There's all kinds of, you know, there's, of course, I mean, there's Killing Us Softly, but there are also many other films that really sort of rip off the veil about a lot of these things. So that's something important. And I think what's probably most important is that we talk about this with each other, that we share the how the kind of harm that this does, the kind of shame that it brings us all. And because doing that just reduces the power of the advertisers and gives some of the power back to us and makes us feel less alone and less isolated in this, in feeling this way. I mean, we're all made to feel, women are all made to feel just really not okay about how we look and about our bodies. And that is just such a drain on us. So if we talk about it, if we sort of laugh about it, you know, ridicule. One of the reasons I think that Killing Us Softly was successful is that I ridiculed the ads and the advertisers and used a lot of humor to try and get the points across. So I think that always helps as well. But as with anything else, I mean, it's dragging this out into the open, talking about it, shedding light on it, and encouraging each other in our recovery, because we're all in some form of recovery, all of that is what will help the most.
That is very well said. And that is exactly why I'm doing this podcast and why I'm so grateful that you're on the show today, because we do need to get the dialogue going and we do need to keep talking about it and, you know, bring it out into the open and not just blindly, you know, accept things and keep adhering to these ideals that are just, like you said, unattainable and unrealistic. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, you have certainly made such a difference to so many people, and you know, just phenomenal work. And, you know, I'm so glad you shared your website, because I can imagine, you know, some of our listeners out there would love to find out more about your work and your videos. And so I'm sure they'll be going to your website, and I will certainly be posting all the links and information on my show notes on my website. So anyone out there listening, make sure to head over there, and all that information will be there waiting for you. Jean, I want to thank you so much for being here today. This was fantastic. And so, all right, everyone out there, please go to Jean's website. Thank you for being here. Thanks for listening. And as always, I hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, you can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. And you can also remember, go to my website at bindthebitepodcast.com, where you can get my free 9-week email course and start your journey to making peace with your struggles with food and your body. Until next time, everyone, to your health. Bye. Designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guest are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find one.